Guys, real quick before the intro gets going, I want to remind you that this is a free podcast. It's one of the things that I love about it. I love making it free, available to everyone. That's one of the great things we can all agree about podcasting. It does take time, energy, and the work of people aside from me to get it done. As you know, I have never really worked with a sponsor before, but I do have a sponsor that I want to give a shout out to in this episode. It is HostGator. I know that probably you think to yourself, that must mean a company that specializes in hosting alligators. Let me correct you right now. It's actually the best place to get a website. They offer premium web hosting at low costs. Grab a .net. It's the best way to get a killer domain name that's not 180 characters. These guys are available 24/7, 365 days a year. You can chat. You can do email support. They offer hosting for any size site with shared VPS and dedicated servers. I'm going to tell you right now, I don't know what any of that means because I'm super unweb savvy. Perhaps these are the people who can come in, clear that up, and help you out on your way, because I'm not going to be the person to design your site, guys. I think we all know that based on my total lack of technological savvy. They can move the site for you if you want to transfer. And if you head over to HostGator.com, you buy some hosting, get some .NETs, and use the coupon code JVClub to get an extra 30% off and support the show. Again, I do need to acknowledge them as sponsors because they are making it possible for me to get t-shirts made, get some production costs for the podcast covered, and hopefully hook you guys up with some websites. So thanks to HostGator, and thanks to you guys for listening to that. Here comes the intro right now. Hey guys, welcome to episode 84 of the JV Club with the marvelous Starly Kine. I am such an enormous fan of Starly's. I got to be honest with you. I think at the beginning of the podcast, I was so excited to have her that I feel I was like excitedly interrupting her a lot. I think I calmed down a little bit further into the episode, but I just am such a huge fan of hers. You probably know her work from, among other places, This American Life. And she was kind enough to come to my hotel room when I was staying in New York and podcast with me. You will hear some fun interruptions by her dog, Opapa. And as you know, I am in New Zealand currently, so I am pre-recording this intro, so I don't have shout-outs, but I feel certain I will be getting caught up with them when I get back from out of town. And in the meantime, I invite you to imagine me hanging out with some wonderful Kiwis and some Aussies down under and in New Zealand. And I will talk to you more when I get back. Thanks, guys.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Let's do it. I got a dog under one hand. I got a microphone on the other. We're all set.
That's how he rolls.
So we were just talking about, just before I started this, we were talking about how, like my theory about why there are so many loose huskies in Los Angeles.
Start with a...
I did know that you were from California, but I didn't know that you were from L.A.
I'm from the... Usually I follow it up with suburbs of L.A. Okay. I mean, I'm from Whittier.
Okay.
So it's technically L.A. County.
It's technically L.A. County. Is Whittier, but it's not Orange County, is it? Yeah, it's L.A. It's L.A. County. So no one, technically L.A. County, no one refers to Whittier as the O.C.
Yeah, but, well, because it definitely doesn't feel like the O.C. It feels more like Orange County than L.A. County, but it does not feel like the O.C.
Okay.
The O.C. connotes something different. But it feels like the real Orange County.
Okay.
Not in a good way.
Okay.
It is technically L.A. County.
What,
which, I don't know why. It is a technicality.
Did you sort of have that experience based on what you just said, where you sort of felt like, this is not, I'm not supposed to stay here at all?
Yeah. I mean, Richard Nixon was born there. It's like Quaker Republican.
See, now I'm starting to like it again.
I do have a weird soft spot for Richard Nixon.
Related to Whittier at all, or is it?
Yeah, I mean, it must be. But it's not like I have a soft spot for Whittier, so it's not like it doesn't. That
interesting.
Part.
Your soft spot for Whittier just transferred over.
No, it's transferred over. I'll never know. But I the reason is because he's so sad. He's such a sad sack, and he's so human.
Yeah.
So he was so paranoid and insecure and vulnerable. So I just...
Oh, yeah. Not,
I don't know if being from Whittier made me have an affinity for those traits.
Yeah.
That's what I'm... Like, they didn't teach me about Richard Nixon.
It's a real connect the dots. Yeah. Well, that was my next question is, like, do they talk about that?
I did a story in This American Life about the about going to the Nixon Library.
I'm very familiar with it, yeah.
School. But I also...
You went to Nixon and Reagan, though, right? Did you?
I went to the Reagan Library as an adult at the Nixon Library, and I talked about...
Yeah, that was a great story. I love that with the kids. Oh, that was so insane.
So sad.
Yeah.
Everything's so sad. But then I was on... the only time I've ever been on... I was on MSNBC, and I was on a panel with Richard Nixon's son-in-law. And everyone didn't like him, because he was like... He was like a blowhard.
Yeah.
And he was like there to defend Richard Nixon's legacy, and it was about the presidential libraries. I had no place on it. No one really, it was a really confusing panel, but he had brought like this book by Nietzsche to show that his father-in-law was an intellectual. Like
his
father-in-law's favorite copy.
Yeah.
And everyone was really annoyed with him because he kept talking over everyone else, but I still was like,
but that somehow, it almost seems like that could make it worse, and that could make the poll worse, because it is this feeling of like, God, people are still so impassioned who care about him, about trying to...
Because he was not likable. But then I was feeling like sympathy towards him and his father.
Exactly. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. It sort of just like raises the stakes of depressingness on like both counts. The sort of like desperation of his son-in-law defending him when it wasn't necessary in that context.
To me, like, look, got number one fan here.
Well, what about someone like, oh, buddy. Oh, so, yeah, just to set the... Oh,
That's my dog.
Mm-hmm.
Get it out. Hold on.
So this is...
Opa.
Would you... Yeah, so Opa is here at the hotel where I'm staying in New York. I'm here for... No, it's totally fine. I mean, listen, I don't care. What about the other guests? Don't care.
Pet friendly.
I'm excited. It was exciting to see actually how loud that was on your mic's register from a scientific point of view, from a broadcasting point of view. So Opa is along Opa. See, I just went straight to Opa. Opapa is along for the ride. Starly has kindly come to my hotel room here in New York. I will say for the listener that the last time I podcasted anyone in New York was Connie Chung.
Oh, really?
I haven't been back to New York. Like, I've been 1982? Back to New York, but I haven't podcasted anyway. Yeah. No, I did. I podcasted her a couple of years ago. That was the last time this gear came out to New York, when I came out to New York. So this feels like a real bookend.
She seems funny.
She's very funny.
Yeah.
She's very funny. No pressure. But no, the last guest I had in New York was very funny indeed.
Oh,
good luck with that.
I want David Letterman to love me as much.
Oh.
Remember when he loved her?
Oh, yeah.
Like, I mean, he probably still loves
her. Like their fake love affair-ish.
So innocent. Such innocent times.
Okay, so... All right, so you do know that I'm lying when I say that Los Angeles is a wasteland of huskies.
Well,
because you did spend some time in L.A.
This is my experience with L.A. and dogs. Because I sometimes go to L.A. to try to live there again. And when I do, I bring him. And so I've sublet... places in a lot of different neighborhoods, and my experience in some neighborhoods has been that it's a wasteland of dogs in front yards behind fences, and just like a chorus of barking, and
make your way along,
so there's a lot of that, and it changes on which neighborhood it is. Well, not every neighborhood's got like a fenced in front yard, but that has been, I don't think I've noticed them being huskies. Usually there's like 10 little ones or like 5 big ones. That's what I've noticed. They roughly equal the same weight.
Correct.
Whether it's 10 little ones or 5 big ones.
Correct.
That's what I've noticed. And there's a lot of like, I've stopped wondering, like, why do they keep getting another? I've stopped, like, in general, that's not a good way. I've stopped wondering that about a lot of things.
Yeah.
Why there more? So that's what I've noticed. But also I've noticed that LA is an excellent place for my dog. Like, in terms of freedom.
Yeah. Is that one of the... What are the things that draw you to the sort of attempts to move back there?
Honestly, mostly it's because I want him to have a better quality of life.
It is. It is dog-driven.
No, I just feel like... I know that he... I mean, everyone... I know the reason people live in LA is for the weather and hiking. Like, no one's ever going to convince me otherwise. No one's ever given me another reason. Like, I've never heard, and I find it really funny.
I might try to come up with some. Because I don't like the weather that much. Get ready for that, huh? Already, I've blown your mind. No, I haven't.
No, because I'm not convinced by the reasons anyway.
Right.
So, like, I'm just like, that makes sense, because it's not a strong enough reason. But I find it really amazing when people tell me they love LA, and then they're just like, and I'm like, why? And they're like, well, have you heard about the hiking? And I'm like, everyone presents it as though they're the first one presenting it.
Yeah.
That's what I find.
But do you feel like that's specific to you being a New Yorker? Because I feel like...
I'm from LA.
But I mean, so do you, but my point is, obviously you live in New York. So do you, as someone who, here's where I'm going with that, is if you... argue the reasons to live in LA that are similar to why someone would live in New York, then LAers are sort of like defensive about it somehow. Like, well, I know you have this great life in New York, and we have all the stuff that you have, but we also have hiking and weather. Like, there's some sort of defense.
I'm not going to get into an LA
they certainly
New
don't.
York fight, but I feel that they definitely the reason they don't present the New York stuff because they don't have it. And so they're not being defensive. I feel like when they tell me hiking and weather, it's like They're so excited.
Yeah.
They can't wait to tell me about these things.
In fairness, I do enjoy, I guess I don't hike, but I do enjoy riding my bike a great deal in the wilderness.
I mean, when I say hiking, I mean walking in canyon. Like, I don't mean like the
nobody
the
has, apple, like, the, an, yeah. Hook. Nobody's carving in anything
to
stone.
Gravity gear.
Right.
I saw Gravity last night.
Oh, how was it? I haven't seen it yet.
It was good. Well, the first thing is I was told... A lot of boys told me to go see it, obviously, because, like, it's hardwired into their brain. Like,
Like, space.
I love space.
Me too.
You know, I love space stuff, but I know the special effects stuff.
That's true, because then you get the list of, you have to see it in IMAX, you have to see it 3D, you have to here's the instructions.
What I mean. I have a friend, this guy, who told me, if I don't see it in 3D, I shouldn't even bother opening my eyes while I'm in the theater. Like, if I saw the non-3D
version. You should still go, but don't open your eyes.
Yeah, he's like, it's a waste. Don't even open your eyes if you don't see it that way. So I was drawn to the sadness of space.
Yes.
And so my first question to the first guy who told me to go see it was, is it sad? And then he's like, that word didn't even occur to me. And then it is sad, although I saw it with my friend who's a girl last night, and she also didn't think it was sad, but it is... There's one very obvious thing that happens that is, like, objectively sad, I would have thought. And then there's all this, like, sadness of space and loneliness and dying alone and being alone and all of it. Vastness is very sad.
Yeah.
So I don't understand how... It was, like, the first 10 adjectives that occurred to me.
I'm so glad that you're saying this, because when I heard what it was about initially, I was like, oh, that's going to devastate me. Because that's sort of the ultimate in loneliness to me, is this idea of being in space, right? It's so isolating and so vast. Yeah. And then everyone was like, you've got to see it. I was on the edge of my seat. And I was like, but what about all the sort of, like, just complete existential, like, here I am listening to my own breath as I count down the days to, or the moments until, and people were like, oh no, it's just a great movie.
It is a great movie. But I have a theory too when I was watching it. And when I came home last night, I put on Twitter, saw Gravity, I have a theory. And then I got really overwhelmed by having to explain my theory on Twitter, even with multiple tweets, because it's just so big, so right.
Ah, you fell right into Twitter's trap.
Well, and I was just like, I'm so positive that I'm right. My read on Gravity is the right one. but it's going to sound, it's tricky, and there's so many reasons it can't be explained on Twitter. But I feel like I needed people to know that at least I had a theory.
Right.
And so then and then they were like asking, tell us. And I was like, no, it's too big. So I'm not going to give anything. Well, there's one thing I would have to give away to explain the theory is a problem.
I think I'm going to go ahead and say I'm ready for that. Okay. I'm okay with you doing that for me with the movie, because I already kind of feel like I need to go in eyes open, because I'm a big crier at films like that make me feel that particular way. And I will just say to anybody who's listening, listen, you better put this on hold if you don't want a spoiler.
Forward.
That's why they created the term spoiler alert.
If they can do the if they listen on the podcast, they can do that point. They can do that 2x fast thing.
That's true.
And then they will only hear the spoiler with squeaky voice, and then they can kind of know when it's done.
Or I can give time codes. I can be like, all right, this is where the intro, I can be like, all right, 11 minutes and 13 seconds, we start talking about Gravity. Fast forward to blank time if you don't want to hear it.
I think you should do that. And then also say a word when we're done, bookended words to say that
love
we're
it.
Done. Because if they're listening on the squeaky thing.
Yeah.
Also, this is a note.
We'll chant something 3 times. I don't know what that is yet.
We should say it first before we start talking about it too, so they know that.
Okay, so the thing that we're going to chant three times is "There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home."
Really long. Okay. I guess she did it. I guess there's a precedent. It has been done before. I guess I can do it. Okay.
Okay. So okay. Gravity.
But we have to say it. We have to chant it.
There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home.
Okay. Now we're doing the spoilers.
In it.
Okay. So are you sure?
Totally sure.
So George Clooney's character dies.
Did hear all that already? Yeah, already heard that somehow. Don't know. That was tossed off to me like I already should have known it.
Maybe that's why no one's sad. I didn't read anything.
Okay.
I like turned Twitter off.
I didn't either, but someone just told me that anecdotally. Like, I mean, you know, George Clooney dies. Da, da, da. Like,
I know,
oh, okay.
No one
finds
it sad but me. That's why they said it anecdotally. Because to them, they're just like, a great joke happened. George Clooney's character dies in a horribly sad way. Although, there's a really bad movie. Not bad. There's a movie called Mission to Mars that no one saw. Tim Robbins.
Didn't see it.
Horrible.
But I tend to see almost all space movies, even if they're bad.
This is how not of a movie this movie is. But I saw it somehow, and there's a moment, the only part I remember that actually haunts me, not only do I remember it haunts me, is Tim Robbins is married. I don't even remember who he's married to in it. A bunch of astronauts. I feel like Joel Schumacher made it. I don't know what that movie is. Mm-hmm. But somebody made it. It was supposed to be popular, and it wasn't, probably.
You know what? Maybe I did see it. Because there were a series of forgettable space, like, travel and sort of space camp establishments on other planet stuff that was happening around that same time. I think there was a movie called, like, Red Planet 2 around the same time. And it was all just sort of like, a lot of, with a cast this good, it can't go wrong. Yeah. / guaranteed to go wrong.
Yeah. And, like, right before CGI was invented.
Oh, yeah.
Like, although CGI, I guess, was invented in Jurassic Park and they put it on hold for 20 years or something. Uh-huh. So, like, it kind of is space camp. Be special effects. I think it feels like it's right. Maybe it's in the 2000s, but I'm not sure.
I would agree with that.
I don't remember anything. Ensemble cast, you know, probably like different age ranges and everything. And Tim Robbins is in it, and he gets thrown out of the ship somehow. I don't know what they are doing up there. And I just remember that he gets untethered somehow, and then they're coming to get him, and he's got a wife on the ship who I don't know who plays her.
Uh-huh.
And then they're coming to get him, and he's got like a hook coming out. I mean, like, he's reaching out, and they have like a thing where they know exactly how much gas they need to get back to Earth, and they like calculate it, and they're going toward them, and then they stop like 20 space feet away from him, and so like they can't reach him, and if they keep going, none of them will make it. And he's telling them to stop because, and she's like begging, she's like, we're gonna do it, and then he unhooks his space helmet, and the way they show him dying is Tim Robbins' face turns into sand.
Oh,
and so it's like a sand castle. It's a very vivid mental image in this really crappy movie. And so the only thing that kind of tempered my sadness while watching George Clooney, because he also sacrifices himself.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I have to let...
Someone always sacrifices themselves in space.
I know, but the fact that his death was less effective than this crappy Robbins' death.
Totally,
like, I had to compare
it,
that he was forcing me to compare because it was both sacrifices in space. That took away a little bit.
Yeah.
But so the rest of the movie is her having to like save herself. And there's just no way watching this movie. I really feel like the director, like, she was cast, and maybe her and George Clooney's character were both going to survive. And then someone like gave him Us Weekly issue from like 2009.
Oh no.
And they're like, her husband left her. Do you know this? For like a Nazi fetishist. Oh, no. Do you know her husband or ex-husband's a Nazi fetishist?
Oh, no.
And he was like, that's terrible. That's what happens in America. And then he like got to know her, and he was like, she's so strong. And he's like, oh my God, and women have to go through so much. And I think, because the movie, like, someone told me that they read a line in a review that said, like, after seeing this movie, if you have a bad day, you're going to be like, that was nothing. But I walked out and I was like, oh, that feels like an average day for a woman. And I feel like this movie was like a more accurate depiction of a woman's life than Eat, Pray, Love. Like, I was like, I really related to everything that happened. Because, I mean, she goes through the whole thing. Hey, stop. And the last shot, I mean, she goes...
Opapa. I was petting Opapa for a long time. And then he decided that he needed to get up, get around, and do some marking.
But there's like a whole thing where, because the whole thing, she's also, for some reason they have it, like, she has no one waiting for her on Earth. Like, they have this thing where her kid dies as a backstory, which what astronaut is no one waiting for them on Earth? Like, it's just not possible. So she's like, just says, when she, he's like, what do you have waiting for you? And she's like, nothing. All I do is go home from work and get in my car and drive. And she's just like, so, she's strong, but tired and exhausted. And like, it just feels, I feel like the director was just like, we're going to show like womanhood. Yeah. And, 'cause it's a strange decision to also kill off George Clooney and not her. And the last scenes, like, she falls into the ocean and then she like pulls herself onto shore and she tries to stand up and then she collapses and then she pulls herself up again. And I'm sure that happened after her divorce.
Yeah.
For like a year.
And suffrage.
So just, yeah.
Suffrage,
and,
baby.
Yeah. And so I feel like there's just no other way of interpreting this film.
That everything you're saying makes perfect sense to me without even seeing the movie. Yeah. I feel like the fact that it's a female character out there having to, you know, make the decision that, as bleak as it looks, it's still worth pushing through, yeah, hoping that whatever the outcome ultimately is going to be will be like a reward instead of just more time alone in, yeah, the universe.
And I feel like they couldn't be like, we can't just make her single because that would be weird. So we have to make her, like, be like a mother whose kid died. Yeah. You know, there's no mention of a dad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's such a weird, it's also a very bad script. But the no guys.
No one notices that.
No, one girl told me that before seeing it. I was prepped very well where she was like, it's very short.
Come here, buddy.
And she admired its length, and the script was terrible, but all the guys who told me to see it were just like, there's a water drop on the left. Like, I just like, it's like, it's amazing.
Shit's flying,
like,
at you. It's cool.
It is cool. It is, yeah, so cool. I can be a boy about it too. It is so cool. It's, yeah, the best.
Sometimes, but I want to be a boy about seeing movies like that because I think, is my emotional state in a place where I want to be looking at that right now, yeah, or do I want to be entertained?
I noticed, it wasn't like I didn't notice. I noticed the drop on the, right, blend. I saw it, but I also was noticing the other stuff and like the unbearable weight of, yeah, being like Sandra Bullock. It was, I just feel like that casting was not accidental. And it seems very obvious what I'm saying, but somehow no one's talking about it.
I'm glad you're talking, yeah, about it. And I really feel like I'm going to see it and come back and say, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's very,
fully, fully agree.
The way she's so tired when she, yeah, puts herself on shore.
Yeah.
I know she was in space, but that's not, she was, it's tired still, before.
Yeah, no. She was tired for all of us.
Yeah.
She was tired on all of our behalfs. Well, I'd love to sort of stick that back into finding out a little, oh, bit, yeah, more about you too. No, not at all. I'm totally cool to talk about whatever on the podcast, but because I'm obviously familiar with your work and because I think certainly your perspective on this, like, agony and ecstasy of it all, you know, the sort of Sandra Bullock specifically, her career, her marriage,
yeah,
but also just, you know, what you said about Nixon and, like, I think the empathy that I feel like I get, like, I'm sort of smothered by in terms of how I see things sometimes. I just feel like I hear a lot of that in what you talk about and what you're interested in writing about. And I'm just wondering if that's something that you noticed about yourself growing up, kind of like, you know what I'm saying? Did other, yeah, people observe that in you, or what, how did that all, I mean, that's a very, yeah, broad, yeah,
no,
question, but I'd love to get a sense of who you were like as a teenager. How does that shape, how does that fit into, like, and then you go to high school every day, that sort of stuff.
My unbearable powers, my
your unbearable
heavy,
empathic
heavy
superpowers.
Yep. Shouldering the burden of that, plus,
yep,
my books. All,
oh,
those,
yeah, listen,
books.
Sisyphus had nothing on you. Nothing.
I don't know if when I was growing up, if that's what people would have necessarily, I don't know. I have no, I feel like I don't remember any descriptive terms applied to myself before This American Life. Like, I feel like everything is now like so set in stone that I'm just like, I don't know. That was just like the womb before,
right,
all the years before. But I mean, what's weird is there's two people, me and this other guy from Whittier, both ended up at This American Life, like,
that's
10
funny.
Years apart. Which is a very strange,
yeah,
thing for Whittier to have deposited anyone in his life, let alone two people. But I don't know. I don't know what kind of, you want to know what kind of teenager I was?
Well, yeah. What, like, what was your family structure like at home? I mean, I've heard a little. Yeah, you've heard, you,
right,
talk about it a little, of,
right,
course, if not a lot. But
I feel like my family structure was, it was very unstructured.
Yeah,
I feel like we had very, very unstructured. We were very. I have a little sister and I have an older sister, but my older sister is 8 years older, and she somehow, like, she's very sitcom older sibling where I'm like, I don't remember the episode where she was on. I don't want I never hear this, but she just, I know the childhood memories are she was off.
8 years is a huge gap.
Yeah. And it was very like Rich Cunningham, like Happy Days, like they're off at war.
So that's like your aunt. Yeah. That's like you're just an aunt.
Yeah. But aunts I would have, I think, remembered more than like the sitcom older sibling. I remember her room. She had a room. We moved into, my dad was a suburban developer, like, but not like a, not the one who ruined the world for everyone.
Like, not like the guy in Poltergeist who builds it over a graveyard.
Yeah. Like that guy, actually, because that is the kind of things that he developed, but he didn't develop enough. Do you know what I mean? He would develop like that block and then like 3 years later develop another block. He didn't develop sprawl.
Right.
He developed pegs in the sprawl. But it was very, Poltergeist is very, very much the kind of streets I grew up on. But there was a time when my dad was building, he got like the lot across from my high school, and I feel like he could have been very rich. Like, you know what I mean? It was like development in Southern California.
Sure.
It was always just kind of like, I was gonna say he reminds me of Richard Nixon, but that sounds bad. He's in a sympathetic way, but so he was waiting to get this lot until we had a rental house. And which is weird to think of, like, renting a house in L.A. during that time. Because, in the suburbs, like, it feels like that was not... It seemed like back then you could just kind of, like, buy any house you wanted. Like,
to have a father who's sort of interested in working in, developing... Yeah,
built them.
This is the pride of home ownership. You guys were renting a house or whatever.
Yeah, well, but I remember it being a weird pocket. That's what I mean. Like, he was always kind of like, he builds houses, but somehow we're renting a house. Like, everything was kind of off. And then... So this house though came with, it wasn't painted, but one room was painted, the room that my older sister moved into, and I just remember it had red walls, like glossy red walls.
Oof.
And maybe the whole thing wasn't red. It was like the middle of the room with a stripe of red, like a big wide stripe of glossy red though. I remember it, because now they call it New York apartment rental bathroom paint. Like
whenever
I look at apartment therapy and stuff, like the glossy is like bad, cheap, for the apartments in New York. But apparently that was not... I think it was an in thing then. And it was this big glossy stripe of red and then a glossy yellow stripe through the red that was an arrow that pointed like to the door.
What?
Yeah, I know. And it was like not that kind... It wasn't like the set of Punky Brewster.
It
was like a normal suburban house and then this like room that had
That's
this like...
That's a strong choice for sure.
I know. And it was just like... Who was the one who lived? We were just like, this is obviously where the older sister goes.
Yeah.
And who were these people? Did they have, they like just like us, where we were all us, and then there was just like the other person in this thing with the arrow?
Yeah.
It was crazy.
God,
nothing
so
else
specific.
In the house was anything like that.
No, and no no archaeological clues to explain why.
No archaeological clues. And she loved it. And I was, that obviously sticks out because it was amazing.
Yeah.
And I remember her room. And I remember watching like MTV for the first time. And I remember lots of things that I did by myself in that room.
Right.
But she was always at war. Like she was always like, in the army or whatever Richie Cunningham's older brother was.
Yeah. And your younger sister, how old is she?
She was 3.5 years younger than me. So I have a lot of, I just remember in my memories, my little sister and I, I wanted to be like a child star very badly. And so she did too. But I think she only wanted to because she was like the little sister. And so we took all these acting classes in LA, like actual LA, like drove. And we had kids in the class who made, like we had the same teacher as Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who like Joseph Gordon-Levitt, like really credited with like his start.
Yeah.
We weren't in his class, but like I remember seeing many like iterations of his headshots over the year, years on the wall. But we, so everyone else kind of got something because it wasn't that hard to get like a commercial in LA.
Right.
We got nothing. We like were the worst child. Like, I don't know if we were terrible. We had a really bad agent who I think was a sham. Like, I just remember her being in a trailer and like us.
Feels like there's got to be plenty of that.
Yeah.
For sure.
I feel like we got the like dark underbelly of child stars that real child stars end up in, but we just had that without any of the other stuff,
before. Right.
Like we just had the aftermath.
Right.
But so we like took these classes for years and we never quite figured out. My mom wasn't like a stage mom either type, But so that we tried to do that. But we also, so my little sister and I, in between doing that, we're really obsessed with like preparing for our child stardom.
Okay.
So we would, would master the poses. We would look at magazines.
Sure.
And see like Kirk and Candace Cameron and how they posed. And we would like get all the poses down and like practice in front of the mirror for hours, like with our like arms crossed, back to back. Like a lot of that.
All the great poses, yeah. All the great sitcom poster poses.
Yeah.
You bet.
We were ready.
Yeah.
And we also had a game. We had a game that we played where we, because the very first celebrity I ever met was Shannon Doherty. And it was
That's a good first.
It was amazing, and she was on Our House. Not, do you remember? It was it was this show with Wilford Brimley,
okay,
and Chad Allen.
All right,
huge crush on Chad Allen. Very gay, it turns out.
Uh-huh.
But Deirdre Hall, from
Days
of Her Life.
Yeah. Okay,
she's got a twin in real life. But she might have been on another sitcom too. But Our House was something like someone died, and oh, maybe the husband died, and they had to move in with Wilford Brimley, and it was a big time for Wilford Brimley because he was in a cocoon.
Sure.
But I was tuning in mainly for Wilford Brimley.
Oh wow!
Yeah, like he was.
I enjoy that.
Yeah, and I was a cocoon. Kind of destroyed me more than Gravity.
Cocoon is a destroyer.
Yeah,
no question about it.
I'll never watch it again.
I don't think I mean, the last time I watched it was probably 15 years ago, and I think I was like, why would I ever put myself through
the scene with Bernie when he doesn't get there in time?
Oh no,
that, he's trying to splash the water.
No, that's destroyed. Oh no, that's so painful. But like, we're talking about someone, I've said this on the podcast before, but I was just telling someone about it last night here, which is that I have a disproportionate emotional reaction to the shoe that gets dipped in Who Framed Roger Rabbit. Oh, yeah. Like I sobbed because it did to me represent every young innocent creature, you know, everything. It's like I can't stop at the plot, even though the plot is often enough, like with Cocoon.
Yeah, yeah.
That's enough to be destroyed by. But then if you take it in any way in the abstract outside of that into people have to feel like this in some way all the time, then I just feel like killing myself.
It's really weird because I had a pet duck when I was in high school.
Oh,
I was not even like Benny and June style pet duck. I wasn't like
you
that
were like
girl.
A hipster duck owner.
He wasn't on a leaf with like glasses. It was just like I saw a chick in the mall on Easter because I lived in the suburbs, so they sold chickens in pet store. Not like chickens. That makes it sound more like I'm in a castification. But I mean like it was like a mall, so there was like kittens and like little
Easter
chicks.
Peeps.
Yeah.
Peeps, yeah.
But we're alive.
Right.
And I brought one home, it turned into a duck, as they do, and I named it, but that duck's name was Bernie after the saddest man in Cocoon.
I love it.
But this dog is also named after a sad thing, and I have a name for a new dog. He'll never die, but if there's another dog, I also, it's a very sad name.
What is O'Papa named after?
O'Papa's named after The Road by Cormac McCarthy.
Okay. There you go.
And it's about the end of the world.
Starly.
I know. And the little boy, he like goes across, there's like two survivors, this boy and his dad, and during the most fucked, can you swear on here?
Oh, totally.
During the most fucked up moments, there's like three incredibly fucked up moments, and that's, usually he calls him Papa, but then during these really sad moments, he goes, "Oh, Papa."
Oh, God. Like, I would think damn upset. It.
And I had that, I would say it over and over before I got him. And then when I saw him, I was just like, "Oh, Papa."
Oh, my God.
And then my another name is also like a sad thing. I feel like I come up with such good pet names. I'm very proud of it.
Pet naming service.
But the other, I went and like, if I can't get another dog, I don't want to walk two dogs, but if I did, they would be so complimentary to each other, because the other name would be Hi Sally.
Yeah.
Do you know what that is?
No.
It's Sally. It's Sally Menke, who was Quentin Tarantino's editor.
Yep.
Who I don't know.
That happened in my neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, right.
I live at the foot of Griffith Park.
I think I was either there the day before or the day that it happened, like hiking with him.
Yeah.
Super sad.
Side note, you know the hiking in LA is great.
Yeah, I know.
No.
No one mentioned that. It's so sad. But so that's really sad. And I do like Quentin Tarantino's movies. But also, so after she died, I saw on YouTube that there was a montage. It turns out that Quentin Tarantino, she was his editor from the very first movie. She edited Reservoir Dogs, all of them, until she died. And he would do this thing where he said, editing is very lonely, and you're in your head for so many hours. And so he would have the actors while they were filming, without, you would never know what would happen, turn to the camera and go, "Hi, Sally," and wave to the camera.
Oh, that's
and
wonderful.
The Inglourious Bastards one is the greatest thing I've ever seen. Oh. It's so, and they're like, it'll be like the girl who escaped the Nazi, like covered in blood, and just like running in the field. Hi, Sally.
Oh, God.
I love it. I love it.
That's beautiful. Wow, that really makes me love Quentin Tarantino.
I know.
Do more directors do think thoughtful things like that we just don't know about?
You don't know until someone dies. And then
that's extraordinary.
I love it. He's in the montage for Inglourious Bastards, and you see him, and he's like so goofy and smiling.
Yeah, Hi Sally's a great name for a pet.
I know, and Oh Papa and Hi Sally would be, I'm not getting another dog, but. I know.
Believe me, as someone who just recently got a second dog, and my dogs are much larger,
I have
tendonitis from having the leash yanked. It's pretty hardcore.
It would get yelled at so much by me.
Yeah.
No, but it is a great name.
But Hi Sally, it's out there, guys, for the picking. But please choose wisely.
Although, do you know, they have to tell if they do name it Hi Sally. They have to let me know.
Yes, that's because perfectly fair.
This thing just happened where someone emailed me a website, and I hope this girl. It's okay if you're listening, because it's okay. But she's gonna be embarrassed. But I don't know her. Someone just sent me a website that said, "Look at this illustrator. She's got the same taste and names as you." And she goes by Oh Papa, OH PAPA, just like him. And her website was like Oh Papa dot whatever. And her Twitter handle's Oh Papa. And her email's Oh Papa. And I was like, that's weird, because Oh Papa's not a. It's not a quote, and it's not even a sentence.
Right.
Barely those words have ever been.
It's not like
together.
You named your dog Eleanor Rigby.
Yeah, or even exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
And even in the book, I mean, I guess I took it from the book, but it's like they say Papa a lot, and every once in a while they say Oh Papa.
Yeah.
And I was really confused, and I was like, I guess it's a coincidence. And then I saw that this girl had been a student of a friend who watches Oh Papa a lot, who loves Oh Papa. And I was like, that's just too weird. And I emailed her.
Oh, yeah. No. Yeah. If there's a direct link, that's a thing.
I know. And I emailed her, and I was like, this might be a weird question, but are you named after my dog?
Yeah.
Because she goes by Oh Papa, too. And then I'm sure she's totally.
It's adorable. Yeah. It's adorable.
But then I sent her, and I was like, and then even the response was kind of like, oh yeah, I guess technically it was. It was totally because of Oh Papa.
Yeah.
But not even because of him. Like, she just heard the name, and I don't know. So that is totally fine. But if someone names it Hi Sally, I feel like they can send me a tweet. They have to at least follow me on Twitter.
The onus is on you, person, to reach out and make that happen.
And I'll tell Tarantino, because it is his. For like, if I ever talk to him, I'll totally be like,
he will love that.
Yeah,
based on everything I've just heard.
I'm not
about
trying to do like a Oh Papa illustrator thing with him. Like, putting it out there.
This is how it all be. This is how the mass kind of brain collective ends up coming together.
My point was that I've always had, I guess, this thing towards. You said the empathy thing. I guess I've always had this something about the sad stuff, because even like this pet duck was burning after this. The scene in Cocoon that I'll never be able to watch again.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, did that, like, as just a kid going to high school, did you feel like you, I mean, what kind of teenager were you?
I feel like so many people look back and there's like a very clear trajectory. I don't think mine was, because of kind of where I was too. Like, I think, because I was in Whittier I never studied art or anything like that. Like, what's strange is I feel like, I mean, I was always writing. When I was in these acting classes, I would write my own monologues and perform them when I was like eight. And so I feel like, and they were like these kind of neurotic things probably. And like the teacher was always like, you should be writing your own, like you should be a monologuist. And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm a child star.
I'm gonna be Candace Cameron.
But it is so interesting, this idea. Yeah, because this idea of what you described initially is sounding like it is sort of more about the superficial side of the poses, and like you see these kids that are just like, it's splashy and poppy and colorful, and yet, you know, you're writing these kind of impassioned, these monologues.
Yeah, and I wasn't exposed. I didn't watch good stuff. Like, I watched, like, I was very much in a, like, this whole, like, no sugar cereal thing. I have no idea what that is. Like, we were required to eat sugary cereal. And I watched TV all the time, like, constantly. My little sister and I feel like we made stuff up. We had, like, good imaginations. I was very obsessed with the movie E.T. when I was little, and I would reenact the entire film.
Understood.
In my house, like, very
also
carefully.
Extremely painful emotional moments.
Yeah, it's true. But yeah,
and sort of the anti-gravity, right, is like this, like, but still all about this, like, isolated,
they both get home.
It's true. This isolate, like this person who doesn't fit in, this creature that doesn't fit in, or this longing, like in Cocoon, this sort of like intense longing.
Those 80s movies, like Steven Spielberg, I mean, he's all about, like the real good Steven Spielberg stuff. The reason we like the ones that we like is because they're about like their children of divorce.
Yeah.
Their suburban like loneliness.
Yeah.
They're about these like oddballs that don't connect. Like he really, I feel like it's hard. We don't. It's not always remembered because he's also what the other stuff that he does. But that I feel like when I was a little kid, absolutely, he was the only one making movies about like the kind of neighborhood
and Close Encounters.
Yeah, but it's all suburbs.
Yeah, it is,
and it's all these people trying to escape the suburbs and find something more like magical.
Feeling disconnected, right? Yeah. Feeling disconnected from your community, feeling disconnected from yourself in some way, trying to understand better who you are through something external.
Yeah, and I didn't realize that because I didn't realize how screwed up the suburbs were until I got out, and now I just cannot believe they're, they exist. But my mom hated the suburbs. Like, we lived in this neighborhood called Friendly Hills.
Oh, that's just,
her
perfect.
Joke was, I'm going to one day write Unfriendly Hills like that. No, it's as far as the joke got. Never added to. Every single time. We drove by the line every day for like 10 years. We were like, Unfriendly Hills. Uh-huh. Never wrote it. This was like one crystallized moment. But I feel like I did not know that when I was watching those movies that I thought I was connecting to like kids feeling alone. I didn't realize it was as specific.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize about like the sad mom stuff and all these kind of things, the layers to it, that now I feel like that movie you can kind of identify with different parts as you get older.
Yeah.
So as a teenager, I don't know what I was. I feel like I was, so because I went to this kind of normal public high school, it's hard to say public even because that even sounds more interesting than it was. It was like suburban.
Still
public.
Bland. Yeah. Still vanilla.
Yeah. So vanilla. And I did theater. And I hung out with, like, activists, which that's what I mean. It doesn't fit. But the activists, I feel like, were the art kids in my high school. That's what was weird about my high school. We didn't have an art kid scene. So the alternative kids
God,
were
no
activists.
Art kid scene, yeah.
That's what...
Even in my weird school, still, like, something, yeah.
I mean, there was theater. Theater was not... theater, I feel like it's a joke, the theater kid thing. When you look back and you realize it was nerdier than... You realize at the time. I actually think it was not nerdier.
Yeah.
There's a few people. Actually, there are a few people from my high school who are now in like the LA improv. Like Matt Gorley, do you know him?
Oh, totally.
He
from
went to
Super
high school
Ego.
With me.
Yeah.
He's like
I love
a few
that.
Years older. And then this guy, Jeff Davis, who does.
Oh, I totally know
he
Jeff.
Went to high school.
You just
with
named
me.
Two people who do my comedy festival year after year.
So those guys, the fact that they went to this high school and they were doing improv for all that time back. So I feel like that. Main it stays cool. Like I feel like if that, like I'm not remembering that part wrong.
Yeah.
But there was no visual art scene whatsoever.
Wow.
Like none.
Yeah.
Like, I remember one kid left to go to Loxa, and I remember being like, oh my god, is he going to juvenile? Is he like in jail? Like what?
Is that where my older sister is?
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was like, honestly, like he could have been like in jail, like painting the mural. Like, I was just like, I don't know what is going on. That is how weird. I feel like I was this person I am now, but without the cultural references at all. Like
if I
didn't know an art kid was like a good thing to be.
Yeah.
And then I went to summer school at CISA at CalArts.
Mm-hmm.
There was this summer school, which is a really good program, and you go for like, I thought it, in my memory, it was like I went for 3 years, but it was like 3 or 4 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And it's in Valencia. And I met art kids there, and I was like in the writing thing, which it's such. But and then there was like art kids with art kids and maybe music and all different disciplines, animators. And I met these kids, and I felt so excited and like such a sense of belonging. And then I left, and I was like, oh my god, so sad. I'm never going to see them again. They lived in L.A., like they lived in like they lived 30 minutes away from me. And I was like, oh my god, that world that I was exposed to briefly.
Yeah.
And then I was a junior in high school then. I still didn't realize that like it was attainable for me until I left.
Oh my god. Yeah. You know what I just flashed to the second you said you didn't realize?
What?
It was attainable? I just realized that we never closed our loop on gravity.
Oh.
Wait, we never said there's no place
God.
At home.
We didn't say it now, and then
I'm gonna say it because you know what? I'll edit it so that it goes in, but then I'll leave all of this in.
Considered space debris. There's a big space.
There's
debris.
A lot of clutter. Yeah. There's a lot of clutter out there. We're gonna say it now, and then I'm just gonna loop this part back in, but it'll also repeat right now.
Yeah.
1, 2, 3. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. More isolation. More sadness.
So sad. I don't know what to say now. Like. No place like Whittier. It's sad.
Well, did you have, because you didn't have the cultural references and stuff, like,
who, I should have, though. I mean, I wasn't living in,
you had access, like, but didn't know you had access. Yeah, I guess
I had, like, this invisible barrier that was like the 10
for you. Yeah, like, yeah.
Like, there was no reason.
Yeah,
and my little sister ended up going to LACSA.
Oh, well.
So, like, she broke through the...
She broke through. Yeah,
the wall. But she's not arty at all.
Did you... I know you were doing theater. Like, who... Were you... Yeah. Were you dating people? Were you crushing on people? Do you?
I was hanging out. I had, like, this group of boys and girls. I'm not a girl hater. I like
appreciate that very much.
But I had a group of... I never had an actual boyfriend in high school, but I had, like... We had this group of boys that I hung out with all the time, who were my friends, and then I had a, and then we would like make out with each other.
Okay.
Yeah.
You had a little collective.
Yeah, but
a little co-op.
Like, it wasn't like a polyamorous thing. Right. I always a surprise whenever it happened, and that like happened later on. It's so weird. I feel like I was not, but my friends were actually like kind of sexually advanced in a way that I. But I was like very, I wanted to get out. Like I was like, I'm getting out.
Yeah.
When this is over, I'm leaving and I'm never coming back.
Yeah.
It was very much like I grew up in a different.
But you did have, so it's like, even if you didn't have the cultural references, it goes back to what I asked you in the beginning, which was there was some sort of underlying sense of like, I gotta not be.
I didn't apply to any colleges in California.
Like, okay.
I was so determined. I was so going to get out. But it's kind of weird, though, because it's like I was from a smaller town than I was. But I was... So, there was a lot of things. Like, I didn't want to do drugs in high school because I was like, I can't... I have to
anything
get out.
Anything
like,
at all,
my,
yeah.
I don't really like drugs, but they... But I didn't want to... So I feel like I was hanging out with people who were doing a lot more than I was, and I was choosing not to because I was just like, this isn't my real life. I'm starting eventually, and it's got to be like a fresh start.
But it's interesting, though, because there are so many people who... I mean, I was just talking to Christine Woods, who's on Stephen Merchant's new show, and she's from the OC. Mm-hmm. And she, we just had a conversation about her having the same sort of feeling that she wasn't meant to be there, but escaping into drugs while she kind of, you know, counted down until she could get out. So it's interesting. It could have gone either way.
And there were so many drugs around me. Like my friend, there was like, I mean, they were doing like smoking pot on the Coke can kind of drugs.
Yeah. Me too.
And a lot of Zima.
Like, Zima, so much for Zima. Sure.
But I never, I got
drunk. And like
drunk.
Bailey's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got drunk one time in high school. I remember. And I like, and it was just, and it was like the episode where I was like, I got drunk and I was like, oh my God, guys, this is amazing. And like, I like made out with some guy and like stayed up really late, threw up on my friends. Like I did all of
you
it.
You did all the
it
stuff
was,
you're
like,
supposed
the
to
after
do.
School special.
Yeah.
Like I'm never doing that again.
Yeah. Okay. So you did, you even had the arc of like, this is the best thing. I'm never doing that again.
And like, kind of like, I'm letting loose.
Yeah.
And I wasn't like uptight because I'm not organized enough to be uptight.
Yeah.
I wish I mean, I would have loved to have been uptight. I think it's great. I just am not wired that way.
Yeah. I have a friend, April Richardson, did the podcast. And she's just been a straight edge her whole life without even necessarily always identifying it as such.
Yeah.
But the idea to be more disciplined in that way was always so interesting to me because I was sort of, yeah.
But she's like control stuff, right? Like
she's better at, I think she's better at, maybe doing that.
I have like, I can't control the chaos. Like I have no illusions that I can control the chaos, but I also just don't like how it feels to be stoned. Like,
yeah.
But in that case, I did not want to be like, I didn't want to mess anything up because I wanted to make sure I could get out.
Well, here's a question. I feel like it's a question I should ask more often of people, but where would you get the sort of like, I mean, if you felt it at all, would it be after you wrote something? Would it be after you did a play where you sort of get the like, the kind of oxytocin rush or, you know, the sort of like dopamine and oxytocin combo. If you weren't really having sex and you weren't doing drugs and you were a teenager, you know, I would get it from listening to music too. But yeah.
I liked acting. I liked all the theater stuff for sure.
Above and beyond like the superficial stuff, you actually liked the kind of creating of the character.
Well,
and
being in the like a high school production at Whittier was not like giving me like,
immerse yourself in the role of
celebrity that I was hoping for. Like, I was just like, you know, and I also didn't get, I weirdly did not, I was in I was in like the acting classes the entire time. I remember I chose honors. I hated math, but I chose like honors algebra 2 over honors theater.
Oh wow!
Because I was
gotta get out,
and I hated math. I was not good at math, and I was also in the same class with the same kids my entire life, and I was barely friends with any of them. That was what's weird. Yeah. I had this weird thing where I refused. I also was like, I have to go to public school. Like I was like, I believed in it principally.
Yeah.
But I knew these kids from kindergarten until I graduated, and I barely ever saw them because my mom was kind of like, I feel like we were kind of the off family. We were also the only Jews, I feel like, in Whittier. But
wow, yeah, you really talk about the division of the 10, because you could have just, yeah, again, yeah. 20 minutes later, you could have been.
I didn't meet a Jewish person until I went to college.
Oh my God.
He wasn't a family member.
Interesting.
Like, and I grew up in Southern California.
Yeah. God, that is so amazing.
I know.
Oh my God.
I know. And my mom, at one point, my mom went to, she grew up in Beverly
Hills. So you guys obviously didn't go to Temple or anything.
My parents, like, they were pushovers is the thing. Like, they were, I don't know what they were doing. My mom was off in her, like, suburban malaise. And, yeah, we didn't go to Temple. I was never bat mitzvahed.
Yeah.
We had a Christmas tree. But my mom grew up in, like, Beverly Hills, went to Beverly Hills High, like, Jap. Like, am I being, like, I feel like I'm being, I'm slandering every, so she was, like, totally, like, Jappy Beverly Hills High girl.
Yeah.
They moved from she grew up in Chicago and then at 15 went to Beverly Hills. And like my grandmother, whose name is Goldie, changed her name to Gwen. Like when she first moved there, like it was the whole Jewish evolution.
Some shame.
Exactly. Well, and like reinventing yourself. Mm-hmm. And then we moved over to like to Whittier. And at one point my mom was like, you should go to Beverly Hills High. And I was totally like scared of it. And I think she was just being like, there's Jews there. Like there's people that you can meet. Because so not only did I not know what art kids were, I did not know what Jewish people were besides my family at all.
Ugh. And so when did you move to New York? How old were you?
18.
So you came out here and you've not left since except to go periodically
Chicago.
Go back. Okay.
Oh,
okay.
I worked for This American Life. So I lived in Chicago for 4 or 5 years.
Okay. All right. I never know if somebody is like working from or like traveling to, or if it's just like segments that are happening that are being.
Well, now there's segments that are happening. There's also a lot of confusion because people think that This American Life is still in Chicago and it's not. It's in New York now, but it used to be in Chicago. It's understandable why you would not know any of where I lived like in 2000. But yeah, I lived in Chicago for like 4 or 5 years.
How was did you have that feeling of satisfaction when you ended in a city far more metropolitan, culturally diverse, where you felt like these kinds of environments are where I was always meant to be or where I belong now?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't immediate. Again, I didn't know what New York was. Like the thing is, I was very context free about everything, so it wasn't like. I mean, I feel like there's definitely kids who are like, you know, like waiting to get to New York and know exactly what they're going to do here. And I was just kind of like, this feels different and better. But it took me a while to kind of figure out what New York was. The weird thing is I always wanted to be a writer. Always. I never had another plan. But I didn't write that much when I was younger.
Yeah.
Like I didn't write that much at all until I was on This American
Life. You didn't keep like a diary or anything?
No. Because I feel like, I don't know, I was just reading like this email that Lena Dunham put on this email thing saying she didn't keep a diary, because she said there was no reason why she thought like Shelley thought it should go somewhere, and I'm wondering how many writers feel that way, because to me I never kept a diary in the beginning. I didn't keep a diary because it stressed me out, because I thought even when I was like 8 I remember buying lots of Hello Kitty diaries, a lot of them, because they were so great because they had keys.
Sure.
And there was a really great Hello Kitty store in my mall, and I would start like 3 pages and then get so stressed out and be like, it's too late, I didn't start early enough.
Wow.
And I remember the same thing with picture taking. Like when I got my first camera, I was just like, I was really worried the film was gonna run out, and I guess kids don't have that concern now, and I was just also like, I didn't start documenting young enough, and this is when I was like 7 or 8
tough on yourself.
I know. And so then I just didn't do it, and then I began to feel like, what, like if I'm gonna write something, I think I need an audience. I need to have a purpose.
I get that.
And so
It's so interesting because for someone like me, for example, and I do talk to a lot of people who are on more on the performing side in show business somewhere or what have you, who feel like it's sort of the opposite. Like the performing is so easy and feels so like, yeah, I'm being judged on everything about my countenance, but like I can handle that. But the writing feels so personal and private that putting the writing out there is so intimidating to people who have sort of more of an emphasis on performance.
Are they performing like personas? Are they like talking about themselves?
Well, I think I don't know. Like for me, not to get all monologue-y here, but because God knows I do it too much on the podcast anyway, but I do feel like, you know, I do a lot of improv. I do a lot of very personal sort of, or I'll do monologues or I'll do a storytelling show. But the difference between like writing a script where characters have to talk to each other and they can't all sound like you unless you're Aaron Sorkin, you can't, like there's something about, it feels more brutal to put that out there and leave it out there than to be responsible for whatever you're showing to someone. Like, it's almost like a control thing in a way. It's like, if somehow I'm participative in your judgment of whatever I'm putting out there in the moment, but if I'm writing something and it goes to you and it's already left my desk and no changes can be made in the present tense, maybe there's something about that that feels really vulnerable. I don't know. It's interesting.
Yeah,
but I know I'm not alone in feeling like the when I write something or when I am hired to write something, I feel a fear like I never feel when I'm asked to perform or you know.
Yeah, me too. I feel that.
Oh, you do?
Definitely.
Okay.
Oh yeah, definitely that. I mean, I find writing excruciating. That's why I don't
want to be reassured by that, but somehow I am.
Oh, I find it horrible. I don't. That's why I can't imagine wanting to write more. Like, yeah. I don't. I would never be able to feel relaxed about it. So if I was writing like a journal, I would still be so stressed out.
Yeah.
That like it's already hard enough to do anything any kind of writing that I cannot imagine. And now I feel like maybe journal writing is different because now people are like, well, that's just my research, my material for later on when I do a mop when I'm 20 years. Like a 10-year-old just like, I just got to build up these anecdotes.
For I better go have some anecdotes to build on and then write about them.
Yeah, and then there's nothing more endearing than going back to your journal and like reading it. But I did not know that because I... but I know I find reading... I find it so excruciating, and that's what I find interesting is there was never a time when I didn't think I was going to be a writer. I wrote a play when I was in third grade that was put on, like I like it was like
that's
my
writing.
I know it was very Royal Tenenbaums.
Like,
it I, like,
certainly
put
was
it on, like I directed it and like in third grade, and it was about a dysfunctional family. It was called An Average Family?
Wow. You know? I mean that might as well be the cover of a New Yorker.
I know. I think I peaked. It was definitely like my most precocious moment. There was a lot of dysfunction, and then there was also a ghost.
That's
amazing. You had to throw chicken soup on to kill. And my parents had to type it out for me because I like wrote it out and then they had to type it. My mom typed it. But so I always wanted to be a writer, and I tried to write a novel also when I was, I started writing a novel in elementary school.
Okay.
Which I never finished. But then.
What was it about?
Also a dysfunctional family. Always a dysfunctional family. Mm-hmm. And all the adjectives were from Sweet Valley High. That was so weird. Because now I loved reading the good books in school. I actually liked the books in school that they
Me
gave
too.
Us. Because, I wasn't really, my parents were smart and stuff, but they weren't, I don't know what they were doing for my entire childhood. But they weren't like, and my mom was always buying us books, but she wasn't really regulating or telling us which ones to buy. So I was reading a lot of crap, and so I realize now when I look, again, this, like, Jew thing, because I look back and all my characters had, like, blue-green eyes and blonde hair, because that's what those twins had.
Sure.
And,
Elizabeth and Jessica, if memory serves.
But they're
Keep
the
talking.
Most... Yeah. Okay.
I did that thing where I wasn't prepared because I need to write something down in a second with you.
Oh, yeah. I just remember a lot of adjectives. I remember like being really proud of like describing how the can of soda opened.
God,
like,
that's all I ever wanted to write, which is another reason why writing dialogue is hard. If all you want to do is like describe things in a flowery manner, like purple prose, then it gets hard to sort of edit all through that and go, wait, someone else's job would be to do that if you're turning it into a script.
I wouldn't even have known that part. I thought you submitted it. Like I finished it. Once I saved it on the floppy disk, I thought that then it would be sent and then I don't even know I don't know. I must have been based on reading those books. And I remember like being really excited by the word padding, like P-A-D-D-I-N-G. Like all my characters were always padding across the floor.
Oh, padding. Okay.
But so it wasn't good. But it,
so they're all in their stocking feet.
Yeah, they were always like toddlers padding across the floor. But I never, I always found it painful. And that's what I find weird is that I never enjoyed it and always wanted to be it.
It is amazing. I mean, there is an element of that, I guess, to a lot of different jobs that people have, which is like
you think
this
so?
Thing that this. Well, I think that
painters
there's
painters all disappear into their studios at night. Like you hear painting.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that. This is what I'll say about that is I do have a friend who's like a really well-regarded. I'm sure I'll have her on the podcast eventually. She's like becoming quite a famous painter, and it is that thing of like. That's not what she set out to do, and now people who don't really care about her or her work are just collecting her because she's become very collectible. Mm-hmm. But she has a horrible relationship at times to her work. Yeah. So she doesn't, because I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, visual artists, like, oh, you just go into your studio and paint. And she's like, oh, it's so terrible. Like it's like going in. It is. She does get sort of writer's block of the painter and starts to think this is all fruitless. And why am I painting this thing that some stupid person who's like a coke-addled producer who doesn't give a shit about me is going to just like hang this thing that I, you know.
No, that's true. My best friend's a painter and she finds it very excruciating, but it's because it takes her so long.
Yeah.
We have the exact same process.
But that agreement of like figuring out, like, I don't, just what you said about, I don't ever know how I could have done anything else. And yet this thing has so much kind of ire attached to it or.
But I was talking to my friend the other day who sold her book when she was young, like 25, her first novel. We were both saying that could we hear about people who, like, are still looking, you know, like finish their novel at 40 or whatever, and are trying to get it sold. Or we were saying that we would have given up probably. Like I got, there wasn't a period where I was having to figure it out. Like it was very, I went from college almost immediately to This American Life.
Yeah,
and so I think if I'd actually had to even feel the things I feel now. Then if it had been any harder, I think I would not have tried.
Yeah.
But it just kind of like slid into it. And then I was stuck doing the thing that is great, but also painful.
I completely understand that as well. Okay. I'm going to play this game of MASH with you. Do you remember MASH? Did you play that when you were a kid? So obviously we know MASH is just mansion, apartment, shack, and house. But this mansion, apartment, shack, or house is going to exist in an imaginary land. So this is sort of your second home, but it could be, I think we both know it's not going to be outer space unless you want to potentially find out what that would be like for yourself. Yeah. But, you know, like it could be something out of a film or a book that's sort of like The Shire or like Dagobah or something like that.
The Shire, I'll tell you right now.
So tell me what you're, give me three, because you know this is a process of elimination later, so we'll find out which one you end up with.
I have to just pick any places?
Three places where you're, but it's the imaginary lands that imaginary you would like land. To have a second home.
Can it be like particular periods of time?
Absolutely.
Like, it can be like first season instead of like fifth season.
Go for it.
Bad or something. See, do people usually come up with them really quickly?
No, you know what? It depends. I mean, the idea of this game is like it is becomes sort of extemporaneous answers that you then are leaving, and you're like, oh, you know what? I should have said. I feel like that's part of this exercise, but
it's very hard not to think of Breaking Bad. But why would I want to live in that world?
I mean, the cinematography is great.
I know, but I kind of want to live in that house. But it's,
you could say it.
I know, but I don't. But I would just be setting myself up for such. Horrible
Greek tragedy.
I would like to live in a loft space in Three Men and a Little Baby.
Fantastic.
The one that the elevator opens up to. That's
love
a really
it.
Wonderful
love it
environment.
Love it. That's great.
Yeah. And I have to think of how many more. Two
just
more?
Two just two. Just to two. I know, I'm trying to make it sound a lot less intimidating. Just two.
What are the cozy spaces? I feel like that. Okay. The Gilmore Girl house, probably.
Great.
Look, the yeah.
Is that on the Warner Brothers lot?
But it's in the house.
I gotta
house,
get
right?
you there. It's a real house. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's where they live.
I want that house. I was torn between that and the Parenthood house.
Oh, that's a good one too. You know?
But okay, maybe the first, maybe second.
Wait, which Parenthood? Oh, the Parents, the show or the movie?
Oh my God, the movie.
Because I'm just saying,
now we're opening up a whole different.
Because I've never seen the show.
Oh, it's.
But the movie, I was going to say, there are so many houses. Like, it's a bunch of different families' houses.
But the only one you really want to live in is Steve Martin's house.
I mean, that is kind of the one we're talking about, huh?
Yeah. I was thinking the show, like, second season. Now they're doing, like, a mayoral campaign in that house, so I feel like I
should I see that show? Should I watch it?
Yeah. I mean, it's incredibly comforting. It's really having some problems this season.
Okay.
But... because there's a mayoral campaign happening with like a main character who's doesn't have political experience.
So now it's like the West Wing?
Yeah, but there's honestly a mom who's just like, I love sending my kids to school. I'm going to run for mayor of San Francisco.
Okay.
San Francisco.
Yeah.
Mayor.
Doesn't work like that.
And then they keep being like, what's your platform? She's like, I'm really good at dropping my kids off for school and not making them late. And they keep
thinking, like
they
don't great
even
plot. Make it,
they don't even invent a new backstory.
Oh, no. Okay. All right.
But there's a very, they have a very, no, I think it's going to have to be, then I was thinking, oh, well, because now I'm just thinking cozy. I guess the Gilmore Girls house, and then maybe, because now I'm just thinking apartments.
Well, and listen, by the way, it's MASH, so yeah. You might end up with a shack version of the Gilmore Girls house. It would be very dilapidated, uncared for version. But could end up being a mansion. Might be too big for you. We'll see, but that's just a process of elimination.
Okay, and then maybe I don't remember what the house looks like. Okay, and while you're sleeping, remember?
Because now it's so funny that movie just came up for the first time recently on the podcast.
Why for the first time?
I don't know, but I love that movie.
Is it Gravity? Is it because Sandra Bullock's out in the?
No, it was. I think I was talking to. It was Kate Micucci. We both were talking about how much we love that movie and the fact that it is this sort of like perfect little romantic comedy that just makes you feel warm and fuzzy.
It's the best.
It's so good.
It's a very solid romantic comedy.
So that family's house?
The family that takes her in for Christmas.
Yes. Adorable. Love it. Love everything about it. How about something, like three things. This is what came up for me just because I always base this game on like mostly whatever we talked about.
Do people usually say like room with a view and house? Like, am I supposed to be, I'm not going to change. So
people
my answer,
go all over the place.
But they go to like other countries and stuff, right?
Listen, it depends on the context. I'm very comfortable with all of these answers. we were talking about writing and sort of the excruciating side of it. And I was thinking about, the same weight that you and I carry around with us about humanity. But I was wondering, this could be the most simplistic stuff or the most kind of like difficult to describe emotionally profound stuff, but like three things that are hard that you wish were easier.
Writing.
Great.
Can't this be all the answers? Writing. I don't care if math is easier because who cares?
Yeah.
Lie.
Same. Yeah.
Such a lie. cooking.
Great.
Because I think it is easier for. And then. I wish it tasted better. And then. How do you describe like. Oh. Gift making, like dainty gift making, personalized dainty gift making.
Like where you have your own little room that's like this, like Martha Stewart has, like, and this is my gift making desk.
Yeah, I can do it. I can make personalized gift, but it's not like, it never comes out that tidy.
Yeah.
And it's not like, I can't just like effortlessly tie the bows and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, like it's easier.
Great. Okay. This is going to take you back to your childhood. Three television shows that you were going to say, one of which you were actually on when you were a child. So this is your opportunity to have been the child star on one of three shows.
Punky Brewster.
Great.
Growing Pains.
Great.
And then Punky Brewster was a really big one. Charles in Charge.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Haven't thought about that one in a while.
Maybe instead of Growing Pains, can we put... My Two Dads.
My Two Dads.
Which is Wikipedia that recently.
Paul Reiser was on that, right?
Yeah.
My Two Dads.
Not, it's not. But My Two Dads means something different now, and that's not what that show was.
It does? I don't know what it means.
Well, it means you got two gay dads.
Oh, yeah. Oh, but yeah.
That show
okay.
is like My Two Dads.
I thought you were
dads.
Saying it was like a weird sexual like innuendo thing.
Unless you're a Republican, it's a weird sexual thing.
Yeah, My Two Dads.
But otherwise.
Was My Two Dads like they weren't sure which one of them was a father?
So we looked us up. Yeah, they weren't too sure. They weren't sure.
Oh, that's
father.
Amazing.
But it's like My Two Straight
that's
Dads.
That's dicey. Yeah, super My Two Straight Dads.
But like, they're gay.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, come
I mean,
on.
Definitely the other, I mean, the remember the beard and stuff? Like, yeah. I feel, but yeah, so they didn't know which one's the father ever. I think they find out in the end, because we looked this up recently. But, so the whole time they do were find just out. Like.
So it's sort of like How I Met Your Mother, where like that there's a mystery, there's a secret mystery underneath. Yeah.
But they were also just kind of like, it's all driven by
and also DNA
by
testing.
Them,
why
caveman stuff? Like they were just like, we claim her because one of us is
such a weird. My two dads, amazing. How about do you like traveling?
Do I like it?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so how about three?
Can you tell by my choice of houses I chose?
I guess that's why I felt clearly I needed to ask the question. How about three places that you would love to, either you've already been or you'd like to go back, vacation?
Oh, vacation or like go back and see? It's different.
Either one.
I would like to go to Africa. It's a big place, but I want to go to Africa.
Yeah. I won't make you narrow down.
Okay. I went to Cairo. I would like to go back to Cairo because I feel like I never actually will go back to Cairo, but I liked it. So I would like to.
When did you go?
When?
Yeah.
Last year. I went.
How do you feel about safety and all that kind of stuff?
I was accidentally in the window when it was safe because there was still like every day some like 50 people were being sent to the hospital, but it was more like that's what happens.
Yeah.
Honestly, it wasn't because it hadn't started up again, really. It started up, I think, in December, but, there really were, there'd be like protests and people would be like sent. I mean, it was one day when a bus was just set on fire and there was like rock thrown and the stage was destroyed and 50 men were sent to a hospital. And I was like, that was like one of my most peaceful days because it was on a Sunday and all the stores are closed.
Yeah.
And I had found like the kind of like Williamsburg neighborhood.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, this is such a nice day. So it was very easy to avoid it, at least when I was there. And it was like it was an amazing city. I loved it. And by the end, I'd been worried because they were just like, they're going to harass you if you're a girl. And like they did kind of, but by the end I was like, I'm a New Yorker, screw this. And I was like yelling back at them. And they were like, then if you yell at, like if a guy's like kind of catcalling you, they get like really shy. If you
respond.
Something. And in general, it was like, it was just like the most, it was I found that was not, that was actually like a small thing. And actually it's a super, super polite city. Like
that's
I found
so interesting.
It, yeah. And that, so I felt like that I was misled. The cab drivers were a total pain. They were the ones that were really driving me crazy because they don't want to like, they like, there's a meter thing and like, they don't want to do that. So that was the big pain. But otherwise I loved it. It was like
that's
the most,
good to
it
hear.
Was super exciting, live, awesome city. And I, when I was there, I sublet my apartment sometimes and I had these subletters from Australia like that April.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was there, I ran into the girl subletter, this Australian girl who had sublet my apartment. And she and
ran into.
Ran into.
Wow.
And she and her boyfriend had just like broke, had gone to Cairo after my apartment, broken up. And she and I had like a before midnight night. Like we like, we're like, it was so great. And I totally just, Australians,
that's
they like
magical.
Are everywhere.
Oh my God,
they're
agreed.
So mellow and worldly. And she was so,
I'm
like,
so inspired by like the sort of effortless ambition that they have, not just about work, but just about life. Like, I wanted to learn how to fly a plane, so I just did.
They really were. I mean, it was crazy. She was, because her boyfriend was a news anchor, and they were like, we'll go to Cairo. And she was like, I just stayed. He left. I stayed. I'm learning Arabic. And she was just like, she was so cute. And she had her ex-boyfriend's pants that she wore. She was like that height.
Of course.
That she could do it. And she's like, I just wear these every day. But she looked great.
Yeah.
And her hair was like perfectly curly. And she was just, she's like, I'm just going to stay here until I decide not to stay here.
Yeah.
And she was the best.
Australians, but, I'm telling you. I agree.
But it was a good visit.
Yeah. So what's your third? What's your third?
I want to go to South America. Chile, Peru.
Great.
That's my phone.
That's you. Okay. All right, I'm just going to do a couple more of these so I can get you out and on your way if you need to.
Tokyo.
Oh, yeah, Tokyo. Change one of these?
I guess change. Get rid of South.
But you've already been to Cairo, so that's
yeah,
tricky.
Yeah,
Tokyo. I know, I'm dying to go to Tokyo.
Cairo's not going to be around for much longer.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going old school on this because you just said Tokyo and that made me think about how much we all enjoy sushi. Three foods could be a very specific meal or it could be just like pizza, but three things that you wish you could just have whenever you wanted it. The like the special that burrito have. That blah, 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 or like, yeah, or something that doesn't exist that you sort of wish did.
I'm really into that meal that James Gandolfini made, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Enough Said.
Haven't seen it yet, but I love Nicole.
You can cook one meal, and it's like, I think it's, is it linguine, maybe? It's pasta.
Okay, all right.
Catherine Keener bitches about it, but I want that.
Enough Said dinner. Yeah. Great.
And then, well, now I'm just going to do it, because then also, the spaghetti that Meryl Streep has, I think it's in, Defending Your Life. Remember when she can just
oh my God, don't get me started on that. She's so adorable and he's so bewitched by her and her eating of spaghetti.
I know, and it looks so delicious.
And then the waiter brings him 9 pies.
Yeah, I know. And I didn't know that that was before we were supposed to be eating bread. Like, I feel like
right,
I look
the
back,
pasta thing. I felt the exact same way. I remember thinking at the time, like, what's the big deal? You can eat as much pasta as you want. Yeah. What is the problem here?
I have no idea.
Oh my God, totally. Spaghetti and Defending Your Life. I don't know how you're going to top that for me personally. Oh my God, it's so good. Oh God, okay. Love it. A meal.
Then, let's see. I'm trying to think of the best. I'm trying to think of the best place I had like Thai or something. Does that have to be a specific place or whatever?
If you just want to be able to have like the best Thai food. What do you love getting when you get Thai food?
Well, I was going to say, like, I like, well, then it's like pad thai.
Pad thai, no, I love
like,
it.
But then it's like.
Plus, the variations on a theme.
Yeah.
But pad thai is so good.
I know, it's so good.
I'm putting it on there.
I know how to make pad thai, and I realize that actually.
Oh, so
that's
good.
One of the few things I can make, and it is.
And there's a lot of flavors in there.
Yeah, but it turns out, like, I'm not a good cook, and actually, my pad thai turns out to taste like the good pad thai.
I
and
love
so,
it.
And then it makes me think that it's not as hard as we think it is. Man. But yeah, I do love pad thai, so I'm just going to.
Okay, let me ask this. Yeah. Now, this is a classic MASH question. It's the romance. Mm-hmm. Three celebrities, living or dead, of any era, could be like young Robert Redford and blah, 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 that you are, this is someone that you're going to be going on one of these trips with.
Peter Falk. Wouldn't he be fun to go with?
Love. Love.
He'd be so fun. Celebrities, like their characters or their...
Could be characters, could be celebrities, yeah. Could be like a person inside of a thing, could be a character from a book, could be like you just want to go with Paul Reiser when he is one of my two dads.
I want to go
be really Reiser. Shocked if you picked that.
I want to go with Peter Falk, though.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't turn it off. That's okay, it's okay. Peter Falk. I saw him in L.A. once, ordering ice cream at Ben and Jerry's, and I got super starstruck.
Yeah.
He had like a denim shirt on that was embroidered with an American, like a huge eagle, like a bald eagle. It was amazing.
Really?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what ice cream he got.
Do you think he had Alzheimer's when you saw him?
I don't know, but he ate more than one. I'd rather you didn't step on the computer, oh, pop up. That's all right.
He doesn't like me using too much technology.
It's smart, very smart. He got one cone, he got one scoop, ate it, and then went in and got another scoop, and I just thought that was the most adorable thing ever. Like, sat quietly, enjoyed a scoop of ice cream, and then made the internal decision, like, I want another one of those.
Yeah,
it was great. Okay, Peter Falk.
Yeah, because we're going on trips together, we're traveling together, right?
Yeah, traveling.
I think it might have to be, if it's going to be, cause I have to make it. I really like what Dustin Hoffman's been saying lately.
I love him.
The things that are floating around, like when he's like the toots. Like he seems like he'd be really, because he's also very sensitive about women.
Couldn't love him more.
Yeah, so he'd be very.
Couldn't love him more.
Exactly.
Went and saw. I don't know why I have a personal anecdote about all these people, but went and saw Tootsie at AFI. Did a they do 100 years of movie screening. They used to anyway at the ArcLight, and there's this one magical night where like every theater has an old classic movie playing in it, and there's someone from that movie introducing it, and it's all happening simultaneously. So it's really a Sophie's choice of like, what am I going to go see? Am I going to go see Steve Martin intro this? Am I going to see this and this? And I'm proud to say without hesitation, even though there's a bunch of great stuff happening, was like Tootsie, Dustin Hoffman in, got my tickets ASAP. He gave like a 40, it was supposed to be like a 5-minute intro. He ended up doing like 40 minutes just talking about making the movie and all the amazing people in it and stuff. It was like the smartest choice I've ever made. Couldn't have been more in love with him when it was over.
About Tootsie is, come on. There's nothing.
Come on.
I mean, yeah.
Perfect. It was a perfect night.
Did he cry like he did not?
Yeah, I think he got a little choked up.
I love him.
Oh, yeah. He's amazing. No, this is a great choice.
This could be like a girl or a guy.
Mm-hmm.
See, I wish it was not, because then I wouldn't. Let's see.
I mean, I guess I said romance at the beginning, romance. So it is sort of romantic,
yeah, so
traveling.
Romance. So yeah, Dustin Hoffman, Peter Falk, and
I know it's hard to top Dustin Hoffman.
Well, he's so great. He'd be so calm, because remember that Ira Huckabee's clip when
oh yeah
fight,
yeah
he's telling her to like,
he's such a calm energy calm. I know
he once ordered back when This American Life had tapes before like pod everything. I remember him calling up and ordering every episode, but on cassette still.
Oh, I love
so
it.
So I like to think that he would at least, I don't know if I was on then, but we'd have a little something to talk. We'd have something
I'm
to
sure
talk
he
about.
Knows
we'd
who you
have
you know what? I'm 100%. Yeah, I 100% guarantee.
Yeah,
I see this meeting actually happening at some point. I feel that you and Dustin Hoffman will be in a room together.
Well, he did have those tapes. But yeah. He could have stopped. He could have overloaded.
No, there's no reason to stop listening. Once you love This American Life, you're in.
Yeah, but you go in waves. I know it. I'm realistic.
If I get the opportunity to meet him before you do, I'm going to bust out, do you know who Starlee Kine is? ASAP. Like, I will ask him immediately.
But don't
and, you know,
feelings if he, I mean, don't make him feel like put on the
oh,
spot.
I'm going to put him on the spot. I'm going to make him cry.
He can just know the show. I really feel like if he got all those tapes back then, he might have overdosed.
No. Mm-mm.
Unless he gave him his gifts.
No.
Cassettes.
If I said, like, the one that probably sticks out the most in terms of, like, it, in the context of the episodes themselves. If I was like, remember the person who talked to Phil Collins? He's going to be like, oh, I love that story. Maybe. Like,
we'll
it's
see.
A given.
He might have been, like, making a movie during that time.
I won't accept it.
He is wonderful. Third person, celebrity, romance, maybe. I'm trying not to just base on them being like cute or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Ella Peter. Might be like Bryan Cranston right now.
I mean, that's because, first of all, he's amazing and he's a great guy.
And he's funny.
Yeah.
I think I might do
love
Bryan
it.
Cranston.
Could not support that more.
And he's got this really great story I read in not the New Yorker profile, but just like talk of the town about this guy falling off this guy killing himself in front of him. And
oh, wow.
But it's dip. He thought he was cradling this guy because he saw him on the street and he thought he was, had been hit by a car, but then it turned out the guy had jumped. And
on
he was
purpose.
Kind of like, what?
Oh, he yeah. What agreement are you making when you realize that somebody's done it on their own? Oh, that's really interesting. I gotta read that.
And he wandered into the New York Marathon accidentally, the end.
Yeah.
Like, it was ending, and he was walking to the park, and then he was like, oh my God, life is great, I can do this, and then he, like, trained for the marathon the next year.
That's good. So interesting.
I'm getting it wrong. But yeah, I think it would have to be him. Comedy, drama, you know, there'd be a lot, too.
I guess the skills thing, I was gonna say, that you have like three new skills. Yeah, I'm going to say three new skills, and I don't care. I put no parameters on those. So it could be like things that no one can do, like fly or read minds. I know you wouldn't want to read minds. Or it can be something more along the lines of like, you know, I know you said you wish cooking could be easier, gift making, but it could be something that you have no skill at whatsoever. Music. That'd be frilly. Great.
Singing. Is singing a skill?
Singing. Absolutely.
Make, yeah, music. Any all yeah. music. Every that definitely.
Singing. What about like? Do you want to be able to play an instrument?
Well, I could. I guess learn how to play an instrument, and I can't learn how to sing.
But this is like tomorrow. You're good at it.
Singing.
Great.
Definitely.
Got it.
Because that's a magical. That's a superpower that I don't understand how people have.
Yeah.
I would like to know how to play an instrument tomorrow. Be good at it.
Yeah.
It feels like it goes. Well, if it's tomorrow, though, I think I'd like to be good at, a sport would be good to be good at.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. What would I not, what's, like, farther away that's not, that seems unattainable? I guess gymnastics would be good to be good at.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people.
Are you kidding me?
Like,
absolutely. Yep. Yep. I love the circumstances in which that comes into play too. Like you're just at the park having a picnic with some friends and you bust out like
a million
moves.
Yeah, that seems like a very, very valuable thing.
Yep.
ballet would be nice.
Great.
Yeah.
Those are all beautiful.
Yeah.
Okay. You, in addition to doing everything you do now, you also are one of those people like, you know, how Jennifer Lopez has her restaurant or Quentin Tarantino has his Korean restaurant that he has invested in. You have, there's a storefront here in New York. And it's a type of store that you are, it's like, this is Starly kind of store. She doesn't have to run it, but you own it and you sort of made it available to the world.
Yeah.
Give me, three types of like place, could be restaurant, could be a knittery, and then like where in Manhattan they're located.
Not gonna be a restaurant or a knittery because there are too many restaurants.
Mm-hmm, there are a lot of restaurants.
I just want to open a restaurant.
Uh huh.
I don't want to open a knittery. It'd be like a place that people come in and get things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd be nice if it could be. Be nice if it could be like I would like a home goods place,
mm-hmm.
but one that wasn't obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
I would like it to be a way that has like, I would like it to be filled with really all the Gilmore Girl house kind of blankets.
I was about to ask you, like, so basically if it's like you can walk into the Gilmore Girls house
everything
and buy
everything. Everything in that house for sale, but reasonably priced.
Great.
Like not... I would like it to feel like you see. I want it to have like the vibe where I want you to feel not like you're not getting ripped off, not only with money, but also like not like you've discovered the store that has everything picked out for you already. That's a problem.
Yeah,
because I do want every single thing from the Gilmore house, but I don't want it to feel like we've selected this and so you have no taste of your own.
Yeah.
And so so maybe in the store there will be secret places that mm-hmm. you have to find it, so it still will feel like a thrift store discovering things.
Oh, love it.
And maybe there'll be racks of like decoy things.
Mm-hmm,
so you
mm-hmm.
still have to like sort through it and still
it still
discover.
Feels like you discovered something.
Yeah.
I totally understand.
And it's not gonna rip people off.
Got it.
I have like an endowment or something from someone.
Got it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one.
It's in
Yeah, where do you put that store?
I know, because everything's so obnoxious.
You know what? We don't have to do a location.
Murray Hill.
Murray Hill?
Yeah. Right. Be in Murray Hill.
Okay. Second one.
Well, I think it'd be a good place to go in and learn. I would like there to be a place where you could go in and learn a skill.
Great.
Not like lumberjacking or arrow making, not hipster stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I would like it to be a thing where you could learn, also reasonably priced.
Mm-hmm.
And you could go in. Well, okay, this is actually something I've thought about. This is actually what I want. So I've thought about actually making this as a real thing.
Yeah.
It's called the Memory Bank, and it's where lonely people can go and they can deposit their memories that they can't, they don't have anyone to come home to deposit it to. But it just holds them for you because there's hope. You're going to get out of it. And you have to do a lot of, instead of a credit check, you have to fill out a loneliness check. And if you're not lonely, you don't qualify, so you get kicked out. So all these people with like kids and married and all that who are used to like feeling all smug, they're rejected, and then only the lonely people. And it could be like
the
widows,
memory bank.
It could be like people who haven't come out of the closet yet. Who and it could be like awkward kids who haven't discovered yet that there's like art kids out there and stuff.
Yeah,
haven't gone to Oberlin yet. And so then you go there, and then they hold it. Maybe the tellers are old people because they're the ones who are used to being no one listens to them. And then they take the memories, and then what they do with the memories also, there's like an outsourcing thing. So while they're holding them, they get sent to other, like if like a single mom, like who's pregnant, gets like her memories of being pregnant, then it gets sent to like an orphan who like has memories of having a mom.
Why is this not a novel and also a movie?
I've tried lots. I mean, there's lots I have many ideas for, I want it to be like a real place that people could actually go to.
I get it.
I know.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
So that'd be a good place, right?
It's so interesting. I'm going to say this quickly and then this was the last category, so I'm going to do this. No. But I'm interested because I feel like you would totally disagree with this, but this, to me, the way this particular MASH game has gone is it feels like Your first choice is like you're warming up into the topic choice. Your second choice is killer. And your third choice is good. Yeah. Right? Doesn't it kind of feel like that? I'm looking through all of these and I'm like, God, these middle ones are like amazing.
You know, that's a trick of if you do jobs, like I've done, they say the trick of like, if you like an ad or something and you work for someone else and you have to give them options, you give them like three options, because the whole trick is to make them feel like they have to feel like they have a choice.
Yes.
Their ego's on the line.
Yes.
And so you give them like two okay ones and an amazing one, but it's embedded so that when they choose it, they feel like they, it's kind of like finding the good thing in the thrift store.
Oh my God. I love that.
I didn't mean
I love
to be
that.
Doing that, but I feel like I'm following the model.
Yeah.
So the pressure.
So yeah,
the
so
one.
We did. Yeah, it's pressure super off. This is just your third storefront. Yeah. Oh, where is the memory bank?
Oh, that's a good question. It has to be around. It can't be around just rich people. It has to be.
Yeah.
But everything is good. But yeah, because I also wanted to be a place where people can walk in off the street.
Yeah.
I wanted to be on like.
I don't know, like Hell's Kitchen or something.
Yeah, but isn't Hell's Kitchen? Where's Hell's Kitchen though? Isn't Hell's Kitchen in the West Side?
I think so.
Isn't Hell's Kitchen all Hell's Kitchen?
Maybe it fancified.
Like
I guess I still think of it as being
like that,
more.
Right?
Yeah, I guess I think of
that's
it as being.
I'm not getting it. I feel like that's Coyote Ugly and like rich and okay. That's, yeah, but it's okay.
It must be thinking of old school Hell's Kitchen.
We're talking about Hell's Kitchen. It was probably a different time. No, I want it to be on like. I mean, let's see. I mean, I want it to be on like 80th Street and. Second Avenue, like
right.
That kind of area.
Great. Okay, and what's your third storefront?
I hope there's not too many rich people over there, Upper East Side. Shoot. It might be a little higher, because it can't just be rich people. But I like that there's old people there, and I like that there's people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, a little higher.
Like 89th.
Yeah, 89th.
Great.
My third storefront... What place involves? I mean, it'd be like great if I could just, if there could be a place, but I don't want this to be like a precious thing. I mean, it would be great if I could, if there could be a storefront that just allows my dog to be a shop dog. Because he really loves being a shop dog, and I'm never going to give him a shop. So I could just open a store that has employees. This is such like, I mean, this is what rich people should be doing with their money. Why rich people do not do this stuff is amazing to me. So if I could just open a store that really just sells nothing for, he wouldn't like if it. You have to have the illusion of busyness, because he doesn't like to be condescended to. Like, he likes the real sense of duty. But if I could just employ people to like work at this thing that I could just drop him off sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't need like a dog walker or anything. I spend time with him, but just for his sense of purpose.
Yeah. Maybe it's like a... It's almost like a, it's open to the public, but it's just like a bunch of independent people who wanted someplace to come to work. Like,
yeah,
an, you know what I mean? Who are just like, somebody's like, this graphic designer is doing their business over here at their desk, and somebody else is like, they're designing some clothes over here, and they've got like a doll maker's dummy, and everyone's busy and bustling, and you can come in and like, you can be serviced by those people, kind of, but ultimately it's just a place where there's a lot of activity, it's on the street, and Opapa is like a part of that mix.
Yeah, or they could be for people who are freelance artists.
Yeah.
Who are tired of, it's because it sucks to like have to be always creating. And often, like when I walk by a bank, I don't like banks, but I like I get so jealous of tellers, because I feel like it just seems so worked out, and they're so good at what they do, and their nails always look great, and they're like, there's a lot of clicking.
Mm-hmm.
And so like, if there's people who just want to take a break from being an artist, and then they just go and they get into some like something meaningless.
Great.
And, I mean, not the bankers' lives are meaningless, but I mean, not tellers' lives. Bankers' lives are meaningless. Tellers' lives have meaning. But I feel like they can go and just do something that they can check out for a few hours.
Great.
So they get to have that, and then he also gets to have
it. Great.
Thing.
That's a great answer. Yeah. That's a great answer. Okay, tell me when to stop.
Okay. Now.
Okay. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Okay, I'm pausing this.
Okay.
I'm tallying, and I'm coming back with your future.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, there are some highs and some lows.
Okay.
You knew immediately when I crossed off Dustin Hoffman, because I was so sad. You knew you lost him, and you were right. You did lose him. But
Yeah.
You got Peter Falk.
Oh, that's good.
First choice. That's a great choice.
He's a really, I actually think he's a real life angel.
Oh my God. I don't disagree. In Wings of Desire. I do not disagree with that at all. So congratulations on that.
He shouldn't be forgotten.
Yeah. It's not like a second.
But I did feel, I wasn't ready to lose Dustin Hoffman.
I know. We spent a lot of time really just waxing rhapsodic on him. Yeah. But so Peter Falk and you will be going to Tokyo.
Nice.
Very cool.
He probably knows that's a good person to bring to there.
I think you're going to have a great time. I don't know if he was a fan from way back when you were on Punky Brewster.
Oh.
But you certainly were on it. That is undeniable.
Very good news.
And I don't know, I can't remember how much singing took place on Punky Brewster, but know too that you were a fine, fine singer.
Really?
A very good singer. So congratulations on that as well. I want to congratulate you also on, now it is an apartment version, possibly because you live here in New York, but you have the apartment version of The While You Were Sleeping House, which is filled with such great energy, energy. It's like comforting, silly, happy, whimsical energy, but it's still grounded in like, we're a family, God damn it.
I need a family.
So and we love each other. You know what I mean? So I'm so glad that you ended up with really, that. That is my personal favorite of those three. So I'm glad that worked out. Perhaps you guys all sit down and eat some delicious pad thai together whenever you want. We do know that cooking is easier for you and that you're good at pad thai, which happens to be the food that you pick.
I knew writing would never get easier for me, no matter what. There was no scenario where
cooking is a breeze. Cooking is a breeze. So I think I've covered everything except for, and this is very, very exciting, you've created the memory bank, and it's a real place.
That's amazing. I've been trying to do it for a long time.
Well, this is all you needed was just a MASH game to make it real. What if that were true?
Over on, over on like that area.
89th and 2nd, if not higher. We could always shift it. If you get over there, and I'm sure that's your next stop, is straight over there to see if you made the right decision about the neighborhood.
Too many monocles and like...
Yeah.
And
no.
Canes. Rich diamond-studded, diamond-topped canes. And then I'm just like...
Then it's got to be somewhere else.
Aluminum canes, fine.
It's got to be somewhere else.
That's exciting. I feel like I have been trying to create the memory bank for a long time. And so if all signs are pointing towards it,
that is... 100%. This is fortune telling at its best.
I'm very discouraged too, so...
Well,
that would have been enough.
Not this time. Not this time. You don't even have a choice.
Yeah.
You can't get discouraged.
So I didn't
it's
get
happening.
The Meryl Streep spaghetti.
You didn't. You got your pad thai, but that just, I could talk about that movie till the cows came home. Well, I did remember that it's not that he's bewitched by her in that moment. He's embarrassed by her because his opposing counsel is sitting over there and he's embarrassed that the noodle is so long. Yeah. So it's not his finest moment in that movie, but as a character. I thank you so much for doing the podcast. This has been a blast. I'm such a fan, so it was really, really exciting that you did it. And I'm going to go off and have a day in New York while I'm here.
That's
and
exciting.
I feel you will be doing the same because you must, because you live here.
I have no choice.
Anything you want to say to the folks before we say goodbye?
No, I think
it's been said. It's see you at the memory bank, everybody.
Oh, yeah, they should. Yes. Okay. Only the lonely people, though.
Only the lonely people. All right, guys. Thanks for listening. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.